Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and here was President Obama in his futile attempt to help get Martha Coakley elected in Massachusetts, the president, this past Sunday.
You know how politics is. At times like this, there are always some who are eager to exploit that pain and anger to score a few political points. There are always folks who, think that the best way to solve these problems are to demonize others.
Well, President Obama decrying politics as usual, but wasn't he supposed to help change that? Here's the president from his inaugural address 1 year ago today.
There are some who question the scale of our ambitions, who suggest that our system cannot tolerate too many big plans. Their memories are short, for they have forgotten what this country has already done, what free men and women can achieve when imagination is joined to common purpose and necessity to courage. What the cynics fail to understand is that the ground has shifted beneath them, that the stale political arguments that have consumed us for so long no longer apply.
President Obama from a year ago today, a little different from President Obama on Sunday at his campaign stop for Martha Coakley in Massachusetts. So listeners, what's the status of your Obama hope? Here is one of your calls from a year ago today as we awaited the inauguration that morning.
Hi, this is Jamie Scott calling. Maybe George Bush was necessary. Maybe the eight-year agony of his administration was necessary so that enough of us could find it in our hearts to vote for Barack Obama. In any case, I'm very excited. Obama! Thank you.
Well, if that was you, are you out there listening again this morning? You, the voice in that call. How differently do you feel today? What is the state of your Obama hope now? 212-433-WNYC or anyone. 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or to our Facebook page. It's the Brian Lehrer Facebook page. And as your calls and posts are coming in, here's John Heilman, co-author of the book Game Change, just out and making headlines about the Obama campaign. He was here for the book interview just last week, as many of you heard. And hi, John. Thanks for coming back so quickly.
Brian, thank you. I'm always happy to be with you, as you know.
So your book ends in November 2008, and here's my main question to you. Has Obama governed differently from the way he campaigned?
I think he has, Brian, and in a number of respects. I mean, I think that there's no question. I think we talked on another episode of your show about on this topic in the past, and I mean, I think that there's it is true that Barack Obama brought to, as you suggested a minute ago, brought to the campaign a vague and free-floating sense of change that he was offering. He never had that precise a program really for the country. I mean, it was obvious that he was a Democrat and not a Republican. He was running as someone who was not George W. Bush. There's no question about that. But the unifying uplift that was really the centerpiece of his campaign, this notion that we would move past politics as usual, that we would move past polarization, that we would have this unifying moment in the country, that is just has been demolished over the course of the first year. And we are, if nothing else, I mean, for various reasons, and I don't lay all of it at his doorstep. Much of it is due to the Republicans and their intransigence on a lot of issues. But the truth is right now the country is more angry, more polarized, and less unified than the day that Obama took office a year ago. And I think that there is much blame to go around, but some of it has to land at his doorstep.
Some of the things coming in already on our website and our Facebook page on how people feel now, the status of your Obama hope at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or the Brian Lehrer Facebook page. Carolita writes, a year ago, I was happy but thinking, I hope they don't take Obama for a god and then get bitter when he can't change the world for them. And now I'm thinking, I love Obama, but there's a bunch of morons out there disappointed that Obama didn't turn out to be a god, but rather is just a human, and they're blaming him for every woe, regardless of the bare facts.
You know, there's no question that the expectation level that greeted President Obama when he came in was as much a burden as it was an asset. But I do think, you know, that it's fair to say that what Obama did in the course of this first year is he misread one thing fundamentally about the populace, which is that he was not in touch in a way, and I think this is one place in which, in some sense, he's governed in a way that was consistent with his campaign. What he didn't do was he didn't recognize this kind of free-floating populist anger that's out there. It's out there on the left, and it's out there on the right. And what you can say about President Obama in the course of the first year is that, again, partly through his own fault, partly through the strategies and tactics of Republicans, but he has wound up in a situation where he is perceived by many people in the country as being simultaneously on the side of big government and on the side of big business. And that is a bad place to be politically in a populist moment.
Here's a clip of Scott Brown this morning on the Today Show, where he seems to obliquely blame obsession with your book for part of the Democrats' loss of the Kennedy seat in Massachusetts.
I'm a different kind of Republican. I've always just wanted to go down and solve the problem, regardless of party. And while they're in Washington talking about what someone said in a book and what this happened, we have some very serious problems when it comes to overtaxation, overspending, and al-Qaeda, who are trying to kill us. So we need to get back to the basics and start solving problems that affect every person in this country.
So that was a quick reference. It was a little oblique, but I think that was your book he was talking about there.
We would have been very pleased if you'd held the book up on stage, Brian. That would have been nice.
And spoken the title.
Yes, that's the only thing that was wrong with that endorsement.
You covered Hillary Clinton so much in your book because it was about the campaign. Do you have any way to speculate whether she would have done any better on these particular areas where people are disappointed with Obama right now?
I don't. It's very difficult to tell. The one place where I've been critical of Obama in the last couple of minutes on the call, and we could talk a lot about some of the more specific things that he's done. I think that have not worked to his advantage. But you know, it is true, and this will sound like a White House talking point. You know, they were greeted with enormously difficult circumstances when they came in. There's just no question. You can't deny the fact that the size of the economic catastrophe that the country was facing, the condition of being involved in two wars, so much about what they inherited. And I'm not blaming George W. Bush at this point. It's a little too long into the Obama administration to be constantly looking back at George W. Bush's administration. But they did have a very, very tough set of challenges on their plate. And Hillary Clinton would have inherited those things too. And it is true that one of the things that afflicts Obama that would have also afflicted Hillary is that we do have this attention deficit disorder as a culture. And people, Obama has tried. He tried at the beginning of last year to counsel patience and sort of say, look, these problems are big. They're not going to get solved quickly. They're not going to happen. You know, I'm not going to be able to wave a magic wand and get them fixed in a year. Hillary Clinton would not have had any more of a magic wand than Barack Obama. But one place where I do wonder, I think it harkens back to the first 4 years of Bill Clinton's administration, from 1992 to 1996. I don't know that Hillary Clinton would have bet the house on health care reform in her first year. And I think, you know, there is this question that people always asked back during the Clinton administration, which was it right? Should they have done welfare reform for political reasons that was a much more broadly popular program? Would it have been better to do health care reform do welfare reform before health care reform? Historically, I think people look back and say that's probably what they should have done, and that health care reform, not doing it in that sequence, damaged President Clinton badly. I think one of the big historical questions about Obama now will be, was it the right thing for him to do? To push all of his chips into the middle of the table on health care reform in this first year, and in such a dramatic, big, sweeping health care reform rather than a more incremental thing that they could have done. I think I'm not sure that Hillary Clinton, given the experience of her husband's administration, would necessarily have pushed forward in quite the same way that Obama did on health care in the first year, with all the economic problems that the country faces.
John Heilman, co-author of Game Change. Thanks a lot for joining us on the first anniversary of the president's inauguration.
Thank you, Brian.
And what's the status of your Obama hope? Dania in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dania.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. What are you thinking?
Yeah, you know, I think that the administration and the party is in trouble, and I don't think that it's all, you know, the president's fault. I think that we as the people have to take some responsibility for it as well. You know, I mean, I think that it's okay to say that I'm a peace activist. I work with a group, Code Pink. And, you know, I think I'm comfortable in saying that I'm losing hope.
Where were you a year ago today?
I was in the streets in Washington, D.C. So I was doing the can-can, the yes, we can end war.
you were dancing in the streets, literally.
Well, yes. I mean, I was dancing in the streets, but also knowing that, you know, I mean, I have some element of pragmatism being a peace activist that I knew that it was going to be an uphill push. I mean, I knew that Obama wasn't going to be the answer. I certainly didn't hold him, you know, up to be a messiah or a god, as some people are mentioning. I think that I knew that this was going to be a push, and it's been, I think, a little harder than maybe I had thought, or some of us peace activists or progressives have thought. But that we need to keep pushing. And I think it's okay to be angry. I think, you know, there's a right-wing backlash, that there needs to be a left-wing backlash. But it doesn't have to be, look violent. It doesn't have to look like the teabag parties, that, you know, that we can still be nonviolent. We can still hold peace in our hearts and be angry and turn it into something positive and continue to engage our communities.
Dana, thank you very much for your call. I really appreciate it. Aurel in Lake Grove, you're on WNYC. Hi, what's the status of your Obama hope?
Well, it's still quite high, because he is by far one of the most intelligent and capable people who has ever held that office. That's why I worked on his campaign. That's why last year, when my husband was on sabbatical in France, I made calls from there to the U.S. for the campaign. I'm still hopeful, but I think his problem is he tried to be too conciliatory in the beginning. He kept holdovers from the Bush administration. He tried to make peace with the Republicans, who have become increasingly to the right. I mean, I've lived through Reaganomics. I've lived through the failures of the Bush administration. Americans have collective amnesia about the failed policies of the Republicans, which is basically welfare for the wealthy, and there's no hue and cry about it. The middle class seems to swallow that every time. So how people could be so short-sighted as to send a message to Washington via Massachusetts that they've had enough, it's quite cynical of the Republicans to use the populist outrage when they do nothing for the populace. So
you're still angry at, I mean, you're angry at the Republicans for their politics. But what about your own? What about your own hope and your own? And I gather you worked on the Obama campaign. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. I spent 6 days in Pennsylvania. I live on Long Island. I worked with Organizing for America. I still do. I called Massachusetts this week. And I always find when I talk to conservatives, they never want to discuss the issue because they've just hardened fast in their position.
But let's back off what the conservatives are doing for a moment. I mean, also a year ago today, we opened a time capsule on our website for people to predict what would be different after 4 years of President Obama in 2012. So we're taking a peek inside that time capsule after 1 year today to see what some people predicted. And here's a couple that are typical. 11:33 a.m. that day, Stewart from Hastings-on-Hudson. In the largest public works program since the New Deal, a national energy grid will be completed, allowing American businesses to harness and distribute from coast to coast the abundant wind energy of the Central Plains. KT from Denver posted that morning, I think we'll see the same funding for education that we saw in the Clinton era, but lower student loan rates, more early childhood education, and a new, bigger, better education policy. So the hope was so high for what Obama could accomplish.
I think they made a mistake. They should have started a kind of WPA public works program, and I think they should have gone right for expanding Medicare, because there was a hue and cry about Medicare, and now no one wants to get rid of it. I think if they had expanded it, and even now, I still have hope that maybe in budget reconciliation with 51 votes, you can expand it. I'm not sure, because people tell me there's a Byrd Amendment that pokes holes in that. Do you know much about that?
Tell me again. Which thing?
You can apparently expand Medicare and make Medicare for all in the budget reconciliation process legally, but I've been told that there's a Byrd Amendment which would allow filibustering of that process.
Well, you can, yeah. If it's actually a budget reconciliation in the technical sense, then it's something that they can get through with 51 votes, and generally you couldn't filibuster it. You're telling me there may be a Robert Byrd Amendment so that you can filibuster some kinds of budget reconciliations, and I'm not familiar with that. But that's certainly one of the choices facing the Democrats now that they won't have 60 votes and a filibuster-proof majority with Scott Brown. Do they go ahead and do something that requires only 51? Do they put part of, because they can't do everything that's in the health reform bill in a 51-vote package, because some of it can't be labeled budget. And so will they do a slim down thing? It won't be Medicare for all because they've already rejected that on policy grounds. But I think they're deciding now whether they go for something.
Well, I lived in France, and I must say I came back to this country. You know, I lived in France last year during the crisis. And coming back here, the stress levels here were so much higher compared to there where they have the safety net.
Aurel, thank you very much. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll continue. We have more guests. We have a poet who wrote 100 poems for the first 100 days of the Obama administration, a poem a day. We'll hear from him. We'll play some more clips from your calls from a year ago. What was the status of your Obama hope then? And we'll hear what is the status of your Obama hope today. Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. President Obama inaugurated 1 year ago today, and we got this phone call.
Hello, Mr. President. I'm a white, middle-class American, an immigrant, and growing up in Italy, we always had a picture of Martin Luther King and JFK on our walls. And I never realized the importance of these two men until I immigrated to the U.S. I know you will succeed in everything you set out to do, but if you don't, it's still the greatest moment in American history. And I just want you to know God will bless you and your family. Good luck, my friend.
Thank you for that call 1 year ago today. Alex on our webpage this morning. Obama, time to clean house. You need to fire your advisors, staff, and get some new blood, or you will be the useless one-term president. And a lot of things in between. So what's the status of your Obama hope today, 1 year after the inauguration? Post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Post it to our Facebook page, the Brian Lehrer Facebook page. Our lines are full. You can get in when we finish up with our callers at 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. And we'll get some thoughts now from a poet. Khalil al-Mustafa is not just any poet. He was the 2002 New Yorican Grand Slam champion at the New Yorican Poetry Cafe and author of a brand new book called From Auction Block to Oval Office, 100 Poems in 100 Days of Obama's Presidency. Khalil, welcome to WNYC. Hey.
Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
So give us your background. What do you write? Where do you perform?
Well, I'm from Queens. Queens native. I've been performing the last 10 years, mostly in New York City. I've been on the slam circuit. I also teach poetry in junior high schools to young people.
That is really cool. So what was this Poem a Day series supposed to be? What was the idea?
So my original idea was I was very contradicted in the moment. I was full of fear, suspicion, doubt, hope, pride. And I went to write a poem because that's what I usually do. And I couldn't write one poem. It wouldn't come out. And the media was kind of promoting this first 100 days of Obama. So I challenged myself to write 100 poems in the first 100 days.
So you've got one from 6 days after the inauguration, January 26th last year. Read it for us.
Day six. Today I woke up with that Barack Obama swagger. I kissed my wife, scanned the day's news, hit my desk without missing a beat. Greeted everyone by their first names, flashed smiles, shook hands, and dished out low fives when appropriate. I negotiated every encounter with, yes, but how about this, and got my way. At the end of the day, I came around Secret Service picks and shot jump shots left-handed, came home, played with my kids, and made sure my lady went to bed with a smile.
Nice. So the first line referred to your Barack Obama swagger?
Yes.
Where's your Barack Obama swagger now?
It's pretty good. You know, this process was really good for me. I think one of the things I looked out personally was about taking a kind of personal responsibility. I've been politically very left in my whole life, And in this moment, I really had to look at my political identity and trying to kind of define my political identity, not just oppositionally, just, you know, not just what I was against, but had to think about what I was for.
For the first time. And how is your Obama hope status through that lens today?
Well, you know, I'm not too hopeful or not. I don't delve in hope too much. I kind of like to take action. So I feel very optimistic. I feel very optimistic about people. I mean, I teach middle school, so I get to hear young people's poetry, and they're very hopeful and optimistic. So that keeps me charged.
That's a good thing. What about your Obama change status, since you're more of a man of action than dreamy hope?
About, like, what do I think about Obama?
Yes.
You know, I can't say whether, you know, I never expected him to be able to make some big miracle, you know. And whenever I looked at President Obama, I looked at people. Like, how were people? It was, for me, President Obama is a reading of people. And I've been surprised at how so much ugliness has come out and so much disappointment. I didn't really understand how much people were invested in President Obama.
You got so. Two more short poems for us. Tell us the date of this next one.
All right, this is day 83. When I look at President Obama, I can't help but feel like we share a secret somewhere. Beneath the press conference smiles, beneath the policies and political correctness, there is a Malcolm X speech painted by Basquiat, a Bob Marley song sung by Ben Harper, a hip-hop remix of Nelson Mandela's spirit, your secret safe with me. Shh, we are going to change this world.
You know, Rush Limbaugh says the same thing.
Says what?
He says, you know, beneath the nice Barack Obama, there's a Malcolm X speech. That's what it's really about.
Yeah. I mean, I hear that sometimes. I think there might be some truth in that. I'm not sure.
Maybe Basquiat will, the spirit of Basquiat will paint a picture of you.
That would be beautiful.
You got one more.
Yeah,
what day?
Got one more. This is day 17. I find myself looking at black men with different eyes, thinking things like, act right, fool. Don't you know we got a black president? I take Barack's success and failure personally. Somehow I feel as if I represent him as much as he does me.
Still feel that way?
Definitely. Like I said, these poems, I never had a hope for President Obama to change anything. My hope was that this moment would bring about a lot of positive change in people. And I mean, these poems are not just, I wouldn't call them pro Obama poems. You know, I have poems that are very critical.
But it's a powerful image, something that you probably never felt before, something that a lot of Americans never feel in their lifetime, that it's not just the president representing you. This time you felt like you were out there representing the president.
Yeah, that was a. It still is. It continues to be a beautiful moment. The symbolic victory still resonates, regardless of some of the other political shortcomings.
Khalil al-Mustafa, the author now of From Auction Block to Oval Office, 100 Poems in 100 Days of Obama's Presidency. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. What's the status of your Obama hope? 212-433-WNYC. And Maria in Mayopac, you're on WNYC. Hi, Maria.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I remember when he was elected, there was such elation on people's faces to see our first black president, that we could overcome our racial divide. And to hear him say he campaigned on hope and change, he gave that people that bar. It was, he held it that high for himself, and people wanted that. They were yearning for this hope and change. But at the same token, as I said, I'm independent. I am very critical of everybody voting who comes to, you know, who you know, in politics. I need to know what they're going to do for me and my family, and not about their own agenda. And to see now, today, I don't recognize my country. I don't understand what he's doing. People are speaking, and he's turning a blind eye. There's no, hopefully that he is causing change, but not the change he has stated.
What is he doing? What did he promise, and what do you think he's doing?
Well, he promised transparency. He said C-SPAN will be, you know, at least on 8 different occasions it was said, it was, you know, videotaped that he would, you know, he would allow these healthcare reforms discussions to be transparent. Well, that didn't happen. Now he's taxing, he wants to tax everything. He's spending so much money we don't have. I can't live on the budget he proposes. I can't work my books. I'd be out of a house. I wouldn't be able to pay my bills if I ran my home the way he's running the country. The TARP plan, the whole idea is once the banks gave the money back, that was to go back into the government. But he's spending this money, and that's not what the Constitution says. He really was very naive when he took office. Because he thought that maybe Bush didn't handle it right, but you know what? I don't even feel safe. He just put, now he's realizing that the Ford would attack somebody in his administration called a terrorist. They handled, it took him 3 days to respond to the underwear bomber, 3 days, but Haiti took him hours. I mean, I feel bad for what's going on, but what is he doing? How much do we matter to him?
And Maria, were you an Obama voter at the time?
I've been independent. I wanted to vote for him, but I didn't. I was more of, I didn't like his policies. He set up the bar so high, so I didn't vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't happy with either party.
I hear you. Thank you so much. Call us again, okay?
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. What's the status of your Obama hope? Remember this voice from a year ago?
My wildest dreams. I'm in this country 50 years, out of Nazi Germany. Somebody would have told me we are going to have a black president, a black first lady, two gorgeous little girls. I would have said to my lifetime, in my lifetime, you must be kidding.
Dr. Ruth on Inauguration Day. Andrea in Hopewell Junction, what's the state of your Obama hope?
Hi, Brian. I'm still very, very hopeful with Obama. I feel like the Lone Ranger out here being this way, but it's been a year. I mean, I really don't understand what the American people's expectation was to occur, considering, you know, what he got handed to him when he first got inaugurated. I think that he's an incredibly intelligent man. If you look what he's trying to do with healthcare, that's to benefit the American people. That's not for any other reason but to get people insured. I mean, it's become such a politically heated discussion, but at the bottom of it all, he's just trying to get people health insurance. And
so you're defending the policy right now, but the status of your Obama hope compared to a year ago, let me read you again from our time capsule that we opened a year ago online. People wrote all these things. Amelia from Jersey City wrote on the day, I'm hoping that thanks to Obama's community services payment for college plan, by 2012 there will once again be more Americans in college than in prisons. Corinna from the Lower East Side wrote, Barack Obama will fix the health care system and end the war.
But so, is that, and were they expecting that to happen in a year?
Well, I mean, the prediction was for 4 years. Fair enough.
So,
that's why it's a time capsule. It would be opened in 2012, but we're taking a peek today.
Right. And I just think that if we are closing the door on Obama and making these decisions now, a year into his presidency, we are doing ourselves as an American society a huge, huge disservice. I mean, the hope that's going to keep us alive is a hope in our presidency, a hope in ourselves, and just an ability to keep ourselves going and to have trust in the man that is running our country.
Andrew,
and maybe that's naive, and I hope it's not, but I'm usually not, you know, the rainbows and kittens, but right now this is how I feel, and this is how I think the American people need to continue to look at our future.
Andrea, thanks a lot. Keep calling us, okay?
Thank you.
Fabio in Montclair, you're on WNYC. What's the status of your Obama hope?
Well, thank you for taking my call,
of course.
And thank you for your great show.
Thank you.
I voted for Obama. I worked for his campaign. I contributed to the limit of my ability. And I don't really have much hope in the parliamentary process to change things radically. I believe more that movements have this effect. And I read very carefully some of the most important speeches that Obama gave upon being elected that evening in Chicago, mm-hmm. and also the inaugural speech. And I really saw underneath the surface, you know, this trace, this appeal to the movement, the notion that changes really take place through a political movement and not necessarily the political action. But unfortunately, this is what I have not seen over this past year. So in a way, movements need leaders in the plural. And I don't see that he has trained leaders, or he has associated himself with leaders so that the movement could continue. His campaign was a movement, but somehow, I don't know if the word is failing, but he hasn't pursued the same line of action.
So you're saying he campaigned as a change agent, he's governing as an administrator.
Yeah, basically, yeah. But again, I really think that he wanted to bring the notion of political movement within the political sphere. And this is what the Republicans are actually doing with a minority movement right now, with the Tea Party. And it has much resonance in the media. You know, we know that the media just looks for sensationalism, and unfortunately that's the way to get your simple ideas out there.
Fabio, thank you for your call. Listeners, what's your Obama hope status 1 year after the inauguration? 212-433-WNYC. Fabio's line just opened up. Or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or to the Brian Lehrer Facebook page. David Sanger joins us now with some thoughts. He is chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times and the author of, now in paperback, The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and Challenges to American Power. Hi, David. Thanks for coming on today.
Good to be back with you, Brian. How are you?
Good. Did the foreign policy challenges to the president that you wrote about in your book manifest in the first year in the ways that you expected?
Well, some of them did, and some of them didn't. And I think that the bigger question is, did they manifest in the way that President Obama expected? And in most of those cases, I would think not. Let's run through a couple. Afghanistan, which a couple of your listeners have mentioned here. When President Obama first came into office, he added 21,000 troops almost right away, fulfilling what he had said during the campaign, although many had not listened to him carefully, that he believed that this was the central front in the war on terrorism, not Iraq, and therefore had been under-resourced. But he also hoped that by adding that number of troops, the military would not come back to him for more. And, of course, they did. And he had to make what I think was probably the most agonizing decision of his first year in office, and certainly one that disillusioned a lot of people who thought they were electing the anti-war candidate instead of the anti-Iraq war candidate. Iran. Iran was the great test case of his promise to engage, to reach out to countries that President Bush had said he would not talk to unless they first gave in on many issues. But in Iran's case, there were two surprises. The Iranians didn't reach back, was the first, and the second was the development of a huge and ongoing protest movement within Iran against the Iranian government. And I think the Obama administration is still struggling to figure out how to exploit that without seeming to be driving it, which is, of course, would lead the Iranian government to charge that the U.S. was once again meddling. North Korea was another big surprise. I spent a lot of time in the book on North Korea, and, of course, it greeted Barack Obama, we almost forget it now, with a nuclear test just months after he took office. And all year they struggled and really lost ground on North Korea. And we could go on, Pakistan and some others.
What do you think is his biggest accomplishment in foreign policy?
I think his biggest single accomplishment, Brian, was changing the tone by which the United States addresses the world and changing the way much of the world views the U.S. His Cairo speech, other speeches like it, his outreach to the Muslim world, and the polls all indicate, when you travel around the world, all indicates that he has rid the U.S. of the image that it's Washington's view that it's our way or the highway. And I think that's been enormously useful, and I think he needed to spend most of the first year doing that.
But the Republicans would say if you do that and then Iran still acts like Iran under Bush and North Korea still acts like North Korea under Bush,
what have you accomplished?
That's the question.
That's right. And that's what year two's got to be all about. If year one was about changing the tone, year two's got to be about showing results. Now, when I go ask this question at the White House, and I've asked a lot in the Iran context and a bit in the Afghan context as well, here's what I hear. Their argument is, look, the U.S. had to make an outreach to the Iranians, a bona fide offer, both because the Iranians might have taken it, and because if the Iranians didn't take it, one had to establish to the rest of the world and to the allies that the U.S. had made every conceivable, reasonable effort to change Iran's behavior, and that if the Iranians turned it down, then that would make it a lot easier to put together sanctions, which is what the administration is trying to do now. The truth of the matter is, though, it's not clear that it is going to make it any easier to put together sanctions.
So what's the status of your Obama hope today?
Well, I guess, you know, if one works in Washington and covers the presidency for a living and has gone and done a couple of presidents as I have, I guess I never believed that the system would change as fast as one likes to make people think during the course of a campaign. And I'm not sure Barack Obama thought he could change the system that quickly either. But so many people invested so many hopes in him that I think that they expected change, you know, perhaps within a year. And, you know, we've seen changes in tone, but we haven't seen that many in substance. I think the second surprise that many of Obama's supporters had, Brian, was simply this. When he was elected, we didn't really know his politics. We knew that he talked about many causes that progressives and liberals like to talk about. But what we've discovered in action is that he's enormously pragmatic and he is pretty middle of the road. In other words, if he didn't get the public option on the health care plan, he said that's fine as long as he gets something that brings cost cuts down. If he didn't get the results he wanted in Afghanistan, he said, well, then we're going to have to commit another 30,000 troops. I'm not sure that those who on the left side of the Democratic Party who supported him were necessarily ready to hear that. They thought that they were getting an entirely new and completely different view. You know, one of my most interesting statistics, Brian, from the first year of the Obama administration, there have been more predator strikes in Pakistan against al-Qaeda locations in the first year of the Obama administration than in both terms combined of the Bush administration.
David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times and the author of The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power, now out in paperback. David, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And listeners, what's the status of your Obama hope 1 year to the day after the inauguration? 212-433-WNYC when our lines open up, or post to our Facebook page, Brian Lehrer Facebook page, or WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. From our website, Jesse on Facebook. From our Facebook page, Jesse. I find myself now wanting to turn inward, attend to the health of my family and friends, and laser focus on launching my new business, and not spend any time reading the New York Times or commenting on Facebook. I feel burned, not by Obama nor even Massachusetts voters, but by the system. Stephanie in Gramercy Park, what's the status of your Obama hope?
Yes, hi, Brian. Thanks. Hi. Fascinating show. I take a somewhat contrarian point of view that I am provisionally more hopeful. And here's why. That during the campaign, I was the only person of my personal acquaintance who was not an Obama idolater. That I got a little too much of this yes, we can business, and I'm not that sentimental, perhaps. But it was only after he became president that I became genuinely, genuinely interested in him, this fierce, powerful, intelligent, combined with his personal attractiveness, I did begin to get hopeful, but I think he seriously misread his true mandate at the beginning, and I think that was expressed in his inauguration ceremony by the lady who read a poem she had written. It was not Maya Angelou, but I regret to say I don't remember her name, but it was a very nice poem, but it was about repairing, knitting up, and I believe that what people really wanted and hoped for was something Rooseveltian. In other words, I remember my mother remembered, when she was a young child, the Depression, and she said, you knew that people were just digging ditches on the one side and filling them in on the other. Everybody knew that. But you saw people working. There was a sense of hope. And I believe that, yes, that going off on the healthcare thing and everything was a terrible mistake. Now I believe he does have a serious opportunity to reset if he can, he and his Rahm Emanuel and David, what's his name, Axelrod folks who set him up in the first place in this abstract program, if they can truly regroup, truly bring themselves back to granularity. And I would like to say one more quick thing. Several months ago in the Times, on the front page, there was an article about a single county in Tennessee that had gotten their stimulus money and that used it to have more policemen, more teachers, more school crossing guards, and how they had expanded, you know, their own local employment program, you know, just by using the money that way. And I think that's the attitude that we need to recapture.
Stephanie, thank you very much. By the way, that poet was Elizabeth Alexander, who read at the inauguration.
Well, it was lovely. Thank you.
Thank you very much. From our webpage, John writes, Obama's a good president. The expectations were just too high. The man has a great intellect. Unfortunately, a high intellect may not be what leads to good leadership. Look at Carter, he writes, a failed president with the highest IQ of any president. We'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. What's the status of your Obama hope? Post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or to the Brian Lehrer Facebook page. WNYC, and some of you may be interested in my Wednesday night television show where web video meets the issues. Tonight's videos include a variety of views from Haiti, plus Wyclef Jean defending his charity on YouTube. That's tonight at 7:30 on CUNY TV, Channel 75, on the New York City cable systems. So it was 1 year ago today that Barack Obama was inaugurated President of the United States. What's the status of your Obama hope today? Remember this caller from a year ago?
Hi, this is Tom from Queens. Regards to the inauguration of Mr. Obama, just another day of the week, go to work. No other president has been noted of any note, and he's just another man that became president. I wish him well. I wish the country well, and thank you. Bye.
Ho-hum. Matt Miller is our next voice, columnist for Fortune, and he holds the center seat on the public radio program Left, Right, and Center. Hi, Matt. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be here, Brian. How are you?
Good. So everybody's talking about these independent voters, these voters from the center in Massachusetts who might have gone for Obama in 2008 and went for Scott Brown. How do you see that center?
I think we're in this period where independents and average Americans, because a lot of the independents are white, working class folks who are struggling now with the economy. And I think, just like with the elections, the gubernatorial elections in Virginia and New Jersey last year, there's this anti-incumbent kind of rage that's forming, which has to do with the fact that things aren't getting much better. And, you know, when that's happening, people are saying, what are they doing in Washington? Let's do something and, you know, throw the bums out or do whatever we can by sending a message. So I was very depressed last night by the vote, in part because I was in the Clinton White House in 1994 after the blowout when health care went down last time. And you start to wonder whether America can get its act together to address some of its big challenges when we have these kind of cycles of gridlock.
What do you think about the expectations? You know, we launched a time capsule on our webpage a year ago for people to predict what things would be like 4 years from now, after one full term of Barack Obama. And just looking at some of these posts, Caroline from Jersey City, there will be a kitchen garden on the grounds of the White House, and the first family will eat by example. Jason in Brooklyn, carbon caps will be enacted, and that'll set off an explosive growth in alternative energy. A universal health care program will be initiated. An intensive diplomatic effort will be undertaken and will come a long way to regaining our standing around the globe. Now, you could argue that he's starting down all those paths. But, you know, half the people calling in today are saying the expectations were too high. But did he set the expectations?
Well, look, he obviously he was an historic figure just by virtue of his background and who he was, and so that obviously unleashed enormous amounts of expectations that maybe nobody could meet. But and he's had to, you know, try and manage our way through the worst economic situation in decades, which is something that he inherited, and so that all makes it tough. For sure, but I guess my big disappointment 1 year in addition to how the White House clearly mismanaged the health care debate to the point where you could have essentially, I mean, the big irony is the Romney health care plan in Massachusetts is the model for what the Democrats are trying to do in Washington, and the Romney health care plan in Massachusetts has actually gotten near universal coverage. And instead, Massachusetts is saying, you know, got to say, you know, hell no to essentially taking their health care plan and doing it for the country, which just shows how discombobulated the whole political debate has gotten.
But as the representative of the center on left, right, and center, and I know some mm-hmm. of the listeners to this show get that podcast from KCRW, was there a certain centrist hope for Barack Obama, and what's the status of that hope today?
Well, I guess, you know, if it's not too cliched, it would be sort of a radically centrist hope, which was that Obama could synthesize the best ideas of left and right in a more dramatic way, which is where, in my own view, is where most of the solutions lie to our biggest problems. And there, I'm disappointed because I have a book called The Tyranny of Dead Ideas, and the dead ideas that are at the heart of healthcare and taxes and education, 1 year in, Obama really hasn't moved the ball forward, you know, moved us past any of these dead ideas. So even his health care plan would still leave almost, you know, the vast majority of us getting our health care from employers. And I think that's crazy in a 21st century global economy to have health care linked to employment. You ought to be able to buy it individually but have access to group rates. And the Democratic plan only offers that to a tiny little fraction mm-hmm. of the population. And I think that's a mistake. On education, in the same way, it's going to take, Obama hasn't said a word about the huge financial disparities between wealthy school districts and poor districts.
But he is centrist on that, right? We've been talking for days on this show about the Race to the Top grants and how they want teachers paid on the basis of performance, how they want caps lifted on charter schools. I mean, that's not a left-wing agenda. That's a center or even a little conservative agenda, right?
It is, except it's so incremental, Brian, because it's the federal government trying through a $4 billion one-time pot of money to think that it can actually change the reality on the ground in a system that spends $600 billion a year. It'll do some good things at the margin. My own view is it's nothing close to the scale of the ambition we need if we're going to be serious about having American kids compete for jobs against rising powers like China and India in the decades ahead. So it's the right direction if you've got a nice hope for a 20- or 30-year plan. I think we need to improve schooling for American kids much faster than that.
Matt Miller, columnist for Fortune, the center seat on Public Radio's Left, Right, and Center. Matt, thanks a lot for doing this with us.
Good to be with you.
Another voice from a year ago today.
Hey, Barack. It's Wiley Dufresne from WD50 in New York City. I'm a chef here, and congrats on the big win, man. I know you probably have 1,000 things to do right now, but I just wanted to see if you could help me out and make sure that foie gras stays legal while you're in office. Some places, including your hometown, have tried to ban it, and it's really a disturbing trend. Anyway, thanks for hearing me out. Good luck with the move, and hope you can stop by for a bite next time you're in the neighborhood.
I don't think there's any thanks a lot, Wiley. I don't think there's any foie gras in the Michelle Obama garden. Do you? And I don't remember the National Foie Gras Legalization Act coming down from the White House quite yet. Reem in Ridgewood, you're on WNYC. What's the status of your Obama hope?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My faith in Obama hasn't changed. I was very hopeful with him coming in. I voted for him very proudly. I still am very proud of him and proud to call him president, very proud to be called an American for the first time in a very long time. I think my disappointment and my frustration comes with everybody else. I feel like he's trying to push these wonderful ideals. I don't think he promised anything. You know, listening to all of his speeches, I don't think he ever had a real agenda, but he had ideas and he had things that he wanted to see get done. And unfortunately, he can't do it by himself. And I understand that. And I don't know why other people don't understand that. I don't understand how the government can't back these same ideals. I can understand how, you know, something like universal health care is a bad thing. I don't understand why there's opposition to things like that. And, it's, you know, it's not my forte. I'm not a politician.
And the way he's going about it with health care doesn't crack your hope a little bit, and you get our last 15 seconds here.
No, it does. I think what he's trying to do is the noble thing. And I can, I'm always proud of people who are trying to do the right thing and are doing the best in their efforts to do the right thing. But you have to wonder, you know, again, he can't do this by himself.
And Reem, I have to leave it there because we're out of time. Thank you. Please keep calling us. And listeners, you can keep the conversation going online or in our Facebook group. What's the status of your Obama hope? Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Thanks a lot for listening.